There is one person who is always able to leave the Splendor Solis. It's not about ability. Orpiment knows how to pilot best anyways. Or possession. There are two others that could fulfill that requirement. Simply, there is one person in particular that has the desire to get off the spaceship that they call home. One person with innate drive to look outwards. Pyrite maybe just enjoys the vacations. Hey, there are benefits to being one of the last original creations on the ship. You're left with a few quirks. So, off Pyrite goes. Visiting dignitaries, making deals with rebels, tracing supply and command, keeping track of who owes him what. He leaves a lot for fun in the middle, too. Sightseeing, indulging in traditional craft, cataloging the flora and fauna that are so unfamiliar to him. Finally, there comes the call he's been waiting for, a peace offering from the Chakurg. He goes alone, as always, a lone robot in a world of flesh. He tries his best not to be disgusted by the living, breathing walls of the Republic and grits his teeth when shaking Vishkidder's hands. He never gets used to this. In brief moments, stolen between negotiations and terse standoffs, you can look outside and see just what they have to actually offer. It's a miracle, really, what you can see in a 10-minute smoke break on an alien planet. A world of animals, of flesh and blood and bone, producing, manipulating, and breathing. Tools in motion, wielded by unseen hosts. It's impressive. Also foreign, also twisted. Also beautiful. It's enough to almost make you feel bad for what you've planned. Almost. But it's a bit late for regrets. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Story Players Podcast. As you can hear, I am Pax. Today, I am your host, but not your birdie. In the spirit of Tetran customs and fully engaging into birds' world, I have killed them and taken their place as the host for this recording. I have also stolen their joke, which is something I hear Tetrans do a lot. Today, I am joined by two other people. We're doing a shorter play session. So today, it is our friend Maiden. Say hi.
Hi.
And Molly.
Hello.
So today, we're doing a bit of a sideline, a free show. We're doing something a little bit different. We're playing a different game. As we're wont to do, it is still GM-less. Today, we are going to be playing Exquisite Biome by Caro. Now, here's something I should have done, which is properly looked up how to pronounce this person's name. Caro Assertion is how I assume that is pronounced. If I am wrong, I am sorry. It's a great game. You can find it on Twitch, and we are very excited to play it today. While we are talking about solo games or group games to play in between sessions when maybe we couldn't all get together, an elevator pitch popped up about this idea of people watching in a Chakurg airport. And this entire game feeds directly into that. This is a game about creating fantastic and new and different creatures by drawing cards. So essentially what we're going to do is we're going to be playing this. We're going to be going into our friend Pyrite's adventures into his first diplomatic meeting on Ausm and the kind of resonance he is seeing. So that should be fun. It should be exciting. And I think, like, if you're at any way interested in, like, kind of like xenobiology, speculative biology, or even just nature documentaries, I think this will be fun as well. While we are on that subject, me and Maiden, we were kind of discussing this before play. We wanted to talk about Ausm, the kind of way we view hosts planet side, because in our game, in Kingdom, and in Microscope, we kind of get like a very pointed, directed view at, on Chakurg culture and how they participate in hosts and how those hosts get made and their specific functions. And we want to kind of talk about like the differences between that and the actual planet side Chakurg and how they would kind of view that. And then, like, Maiden, I'm going to leave this to you. These are your babies. I have nothing to do with them. It's really funny that you went so purely biological, completely, like, separately from me, who went purely mechanical. So I'm like, ooh, the world of the flesh, I don't know. So I'll leave that to you and kind of, like, this kind of, like, how we're going to explore these hosts and maybe how the Chakurg view them rather than our like specific pointed references of Wilfred and Zicht.
Yeah, so I think Wilfred and Zicht both present very different opinions on what a host is. I mean, mm-hmm. Wilfred is a host. Like, that's the whole point. Wilfred is a host, but Wilfred being sentient and a person is, like, definitely out of line for hosts. So, like, mm-hmm. Wilfred is one of a kind. Most of these hosts will be probably sapient. They can, like, feel pain, but they are not thinking creatures the same way humans are thinking creatures.
Yeah, there's, like, a level mm-hmm. of consciousness that is not present in a lot of hosts that Wilfred is sort of an exception to.
Yeah, your average host intelligence is somewhere near, like, cow or pig. You might have a couple mm-hmm. that get closer to, like, some particularly intelligent crows or, like, an octopus, but you're not going to have anything that is capable of self-reflection or speech or higher-level complex thought.
So how many of these can pass the mirror test, do you think?
The vast majority can't without having a Chakurg in their brain to be like, no, that's you, you idiot.
Mm-hmm. I always think about that because I always think about that one comic that's like, who is that dog? Who is he? It always makes me.
Yeah.
It always gets me. And as well, something I just kind of want to bring attention to is that a lot of Zicht's hosts in particular are completely 100% geared towards certain tasks. Did I get that right or am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, Zicht's,
like, their surgery form.
Yeah, Zicht's surgery form is, like, we have described it once or twice as being this huge arthropod that literally grows out of the floor of Zicht's surgical chamber. And it, like, this animal could not exist on its own because it is, like, they did the barnacle thing of making it completely still, but there is nothing in that environment that would feed it. If Zicht didn't go in and give it, like, protein and stuff like that, it would not be able to find food and it would just die. And that is the difference mm-hmm. between the way Zicht treats hosts and the way a lot of Chakurg on the planet treat hosts, is that it is viewed mm-hmm. as very important to create the kind of hosts that
that can be left alone for a weekend.
Yeah, because, like, Zicht views hosts the way we view clothes. Zicht, mm-hmm. Zicht views a host as something it puts on when it wants to look a different way, and when it's not using its hosts, it just puts them in, like, chemically induced comas with, like, some nutrient shrimp, and is like, well, you'll be fine. But for other Chakurg, especially planet side, it's super common to be like, oh yeah, that's the host I used to get to work, and it's, like, grazing in the front yard. It is more mm-hmm. important that your hosts are coherent creatures that can exist in the context of a biome, even if that biome is somewhat artificial and don't require constant intervention to exist. It is not making clothes, it is creating a species. The nature of Zicht being on a space station makes that harder, for one.
So Zicht is, like, both more high maintenance and less high maintenance with his hosts?
Yeah.
Just a very strange, idiosyncratic creature Zicht is, and that's mm-hmm. why we love them so, so much. Yes.
I think it's also very important to just, this probably won't come up in play, but I think if we're talking about Chakurg culture and the way things are viewed, especially relating to hosts, I regret mm-hmm. to inform you guys, it's time for a catch-up course on how Chakurg do gender.
Okay.
Which is
a quick aside on gender.
Yeah, which is that even beyond Zicht being an any all explicitly gender fluid character, the way they express that gender fluidity within Chukurg culture and Chukurg ideals is the idea that, like, to kind of date this episode, when Vishtkitter wears a certain form, he would view that form as being his gender. The form he is going to wear to a diplomatic party is male, and therefore his gender is male when he is in that form. He might wear a different form, and because he would, like, the way Chukurg names are created is the consonants come from the parasite and the vowels come from the host. So the idea being that, like, if you're in a different host, your name is different because who you are as a person is different, and therefore your gender is different. Mm-hmm. So weirdly enough, and it is very much reflecting the fact that, like, a reflection of, like, who you are at work is different than who you are at home, because you, in that culture, you literally have, like, a separate body you use for at home versus what you do at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Parasitism, I guess.
Yeah. So Zicht having one, a name that doesn't change at all when they change forms, and having a relatively consistent gender, even if that gender is any all switch 'em up, is weird for Chukurg. And that is just something to keep in the back of your mind when we're creating these hosts and when we're thinking about these people.
Mm-hmm. Especially since the game has options to talk about sexual dimorphism, whether that exists or not within the certain species we're talking about. It's good to get this kind of, like, information about the Chukurg and their special relationship within gender and their symbiotic relationships with our hosts in that gender. Yes, I think that is it for that little section I wrote down in my notes. So I think from here on, we're going to do some, like, fun reading directly from the book, because nothing gives, like, a better introduction than the writer's own words. And what they do, I will blast through this as fast as possible for all of us, because I'm actually really excited to play. Exquisite Biome starts us off with the bird's eye view. Exquisite Biome is a game about the natural world, creatures that inhabit it, and the ways they live alongside each other. During play, you'll generate an ecosystem and use prompts and questions to discover and create the creatures that live there. You can play it alone, which is not what we're doing, of course. We're playing it in a group by building on each other's ideas together. To play this game, it's a really simple game. You just need a 52 deck of playing cards with the jokers removed. I don't know what you would do with jokers in this game. Is it just, like, free play?
Yeah,
that might be, like, a fun idea to do.
Yeah, I've played a couple tabletop games like this that are, like, deck of cards based prompt games, where it has been house ruled that, like, if you, especially because, like, with Roll20, which is how we're doing the cards for this game, because unfortunately distance exists. We didn't fly down to South Africa to record this episode. I'm very sorry.
Which is so upsetting. Guys, it's snowing over here, which is definitely not a bad sign. Well, it's not snowing over here. It's snowing somewhere else in the country, but it's still exciting to hear that there's snow. Exciting and terrifying. Maybe next time. I can't wait until we do live shows, to which I will get to fly to America for sure. 100%, right? The podcaster's visa.
But yeah, just because you can't remove jokers on Roll20. I have had it be like, jokers or pick whatever you want.
So we'll move straight on to the first part of the game, which is the lay of the land. It's all about establishing your environment. Actually, this is a good question for you two. Do we want to go into a specific environment? Do we want the game to pick for us? Do we have an idea of where we already want to play in that kind of area? Do any of you guys have a preference? I'm happy to go with what the game tells us.
I do not. I am fine with going where the game tells us. But maybe if you have a specific spot, since it is kind of your world.
I mean, the whole point of Ausm is that it is completely unrecognizable from what it was because they have terraformed it so completely. So I think, yeah, I think it is interesting to let the game tell us where to go, because the answer is, like, it could be any of these things.
It could be the specific zoo the pirate has chosen to visit. All right. If you need a place to start, begin by drawing two cards from the deck. These are your biome cards, which you will use to frame the environment in which your creatures dwell. Compare the rank and suit of these two cards to the tables on this page and the next. The first card sets up the big picture of your biome, while the second card adds some additional flavor. Some of these prompts may overlap, contradict each other, or raise further questions. What does a dry season look like in this wetland? What is a high-altitude coastline? If you don't have an answer, ask your fellow players, or make something up. Feel free to get weird with it. So I'm going to encourage you, Maiden, I think, to start us off with the environment. I just think that sounds like it's your home, it's your planet, it's what you decided. I think let's draw your first two cards and let's look at it.
All right, so our first card is a King of Clubs.
All right.
So we've got wetland or marsh, but also our current season is cool and dry.
Winter wonderland in the March.
I mean, that's kind of immediately what I went to, right? Like, cool and dry is kind of, like, wintry, where even if it's not explicitly winter, it's still probably, like, this is a wetland, but a lot of the actual wet of the wetland has dried up. Like, imagining, like, cattails with their whole underwater system exposed, and a lot of, like, not necessarily fully dried up lake beds, but places where it's like there is knee-deep mud here, because usually this place is under 2 feet of water that is just dried up here.
Interesting. I think that's fun. I think that also sounds like kind of an environment that you could do a lot in.
Yeah.
So I'll invite you to pull out the next card if you don't have any more specificity to add on to that.
I also think the one specificity I would add is for our framing device. The original idea was Shkurg Airport, but I will also specify that I don't think this is an airport.
I don't think so either.
Because I don't think they have airports. Their whole deal is being like this weird isolationist. Why would they have airports if no one is allowed on planet?
Yeah. Something I will kind of ask you, in terms of public life of the Shkurg, are things like parks and public places readily there, or are they more like very self-centered third spaces, don't really exist, you go home, work, whatever you need?
I do think it is a third spaces don't exist, like... Mm-hmm. A lot of the Shkurg stuff is about being, again, we don't really see this with Zicht, but the Shkurg are explicitly like this enormous, nightmarish bureaucracy where everyone has a million job titles and the average worker probably doesn't even own their body because it belongs to the state as an engine of, like, industry. And I don't think that kind of society would have, like, third spaces.
So it would be like our galaxy unemployment rate is 40%, but it doesn't account for Shkurg George, who has 6 jobs and no free time left.
Yeah, every Shkurg worker who has engineered 6 different new types of stimulant to keep him awake at his 18 jobs.
Mm-hmm. So I guess rather what we can take this as is maybe Pyrite leaving a meeting and taking... some sort of robotic smoke break. It's really the image of Pyrite doing like some sort of stimulant is so funny to me. So like this is rather watching people on the street rather than an airport, I imagine.
Yeah, this is probably Pyrite touched down. I don't think we want to go too super in detail as to come up with like the lore of why Pyrite is here. other than that
Pirate's on vacation.
Yeah, Pirate is on some sort of like half diplomatic, half vacation thing where he finally managed to get planet side and is like one of the first non-Chakurg to ever set foot on Ausm, and it is very much like he has landed, he has done his diplomatic stuff, and he is just kind of wandering the planet, and this is where he ended up. This is maybe like next to where he touched down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely like that. So I'll invite you to take the next card, which is more of an environmental detail, gives us a little bit more flavor and around what time of day he is landed at.
Oh, this is fascinating.
Okay.
High altitude.
A high altitude wetland.
Do you want...
You know...
You first.
Something it does kind of make me think of is, I'm not going to specify that this is where I grew up or whatever, but one of the first kind of experiences I had with like a different kind of environment is I went to where they grew a lot of tea in Tanzania, which is up in the mountains, completely surrounded by mist and kind of like a cooler weather than I'd been used to living like close to the equator. And that's always left like this big impression to me as like mountains that are kind of like cool and wet because of the condensation of clouds. And that's what that automatically makes me think of, you know?
Yeah, I really like that. My immediate thought when I heard high altitude was like some sort of like mountain valley, like between two mountains where it's like there is no easy drainage. You're kind of in like a ring of mountains and all the precipitation from the clouds and the mist and like the mountain rain from clouds hitting the edges of the mountains just kind of collects here.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
And it's midday. It's right where all everything's awake. It's lunch. It's the lunch break.
It also kind of makes sense that, like, Pyrite would touch down here if it's, like, a high point.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, well, where do you land your shuttle? Well, I guess you land it somewhere high up because that's, like, slightly easier to land on.
This, as well, is just our basis to kind of, like, give the idea of what sort of animals would be here. You never have to follow it 100%. Well, you do have to follow it 100%. But what I'm saying is it's more of a guide to lead your imagination rather than restrain it. So just keep it in mind, kind of more of a high altitude mountainous place and the kind of interactions you can have with the environment during this non-wet, dry season. Good enough. From there, we've established our environments. So now we are going to go into discovering creatures. This is the first person Pyrite sees, which is so fun for a guy who is completely squipped out by flesh. To do this, you will draw three cards of the deck and place them in a row. This time we'll be doing Exquisite Plus, which is a game mode that allows you to draw four cards. We'll be using these creature cards to describe an animal that resides in your biome. Each card has one or more prompts that correspond to its suit or rank. Starting with the player who most recently touched an animal, take turns responding to these prompts, add a detail, or answer the question. For example, for the first creature card, a general description, one player might choose to begin by saying, these prompts make me think of this particular species of bird, so let's use that as our starting point. You may also wish to look at all the prompts for all three cards at once, or pick and choose prompts to respond to whichever order you please. That works just as well. As you proceed, you may wish to ask follow-up questions, make suggestions, or jot down additional details. Be sure to take turns and make space for every player's voice to be heard. So, I'm going to ask you guys now, when is the last time you touched an animal?
Oh, it's been a really long time. I am not winning this one.
At the latest, it was this morning when I was trying to stop my cats from destroying the carpet.
Oh my goodness, it might actually be me then. Because I said goodnight to my cat at like 10 p.m. my time, which was like 3 hours ago.
Yeah, the last time I touched an animal was like... God, it was almost like a week ago. I need to touch more animals.
You really do. It's so calming. So I think I might actually be winning this one, which is fine because it means, Molly, when we get to the second creature cards, you get to draw two and spend extra time on it. Yay.
Speaking of my cat destroying the carpet, I need to let her into this room or she'll destroy more carpet.
Just please, please let her in.
I was trying to get my cat to meow into the mic to say hi, but she refused. Now that she's in here, she's nice and quiet.
That's always how it happens. I keep trying to get Kenai to talk to you, anybody on my mic, and he just doesn't. He just yells and it never picks up. It's so annoying. All right, so then I will start first and I will pull up a card. Okay, I got a Three of Clubs. Which in this book, clubs are reptiles or amphibians, e.g. crocodilians, sauropods, lizards, frogs, salamanders. And then a three, an ecological niche, a leaf, shrub, or fruit eater. I'm obsessed with the idea of like a fruit-eating amphibian. It keeps like getting to me, you know, I don't know why, like a vegetarian frog seems really funny to me.
Yeah. Like fruitarian/vegetarian reptile amphibians aren't really a thing. They're all pretty solidly like carnivore omnivores to my knowledge, unless you go back to like.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else. So
dinosaurs where it's like.
And I don't want to go there. I don't want to go dinosaurs. I want to go like, my brain keeps thinking about frogs or like those giant salamanders. But I guess I keep getting stuck on frogs because I keep getting this image, and it's like super hyper specific. But I keep getting this image of a frog that's using its tongue to like grab a persimmon off a tree, and it's like the persimmon is like too big for its mouth.
I was also kind of thinking about what if a frog just used its tongue to like yank fruit down.
I love that. I think we should go for amphibian. Incredible. I think we should go for fruit eater because I really like that. So I'm happy to go for that one, you know?
I think that also fits our air. Like, this is a wetland, and even in the dry season, like, there's frogs.
Yeah, and then you have, like, this goes for the same thing where it could be, like, a mud skipper inspired frogs. It's funny when you mentioned cattails, because the first thing I thought of were mangrove forests. Which really shows, like, the difference between the things that we're used to. I don't think I've ever seen a cattail in person.
Yeah, the wetlands you've been in and the wetlands that I've been in.
So I'm going for, like, a mudskipper frog fruitarian. That's where I think I want us to go with this.
Yeah. I think at the end of creating this creature, if it doesn't become obvious, and I think there are going to be some creatures where it's going to become really obvious, and there's going to be some, I think we should try and figure out, like, what is this host's purpose, right? Like, is this someone's weird fashion statement? Is this, what job does this host do? Why did they make this frog that eats fruit?
Why would you choose this?
Yeah.
Like, what about it? Yeah. No. I really like that. I'm super happy to go with that direction. So the next thing that we will be doing is, the next page is a distinctive feature. We'll actually be doing two of these. So, Molly, you can draw two cards. You can draw one card at a time. And then we will go through each of the tables together, kind of listing off some ideas for you. Okay. So a Four of Spades.
Yeah, so that distinctive feature. Oh, this is fun with our little frog guy.
This one is fascinating. This is like an immediate one where they're talking about like how certain things contradict. This mm-hmm. immediately makes me think, because when I think frogs, I think fleshy. So mm-hmm. why don't you describe what a four a black suited four gives us.
Yes. So a black suited four gives us a hard carapace, And the questions that it's asking are, is this a dull and flat or shiny and reflective? And my question is, how does that work on a frog?
That's the thing, right? Are we talking about, like, an armor? Are we talking about, like, selective scaling that looks ornamental? Mm-hmm. Where does your, like, mind go for this one?
Well, my thought on that is just, like, with the fruit collection, if it's maybe an extension of the jaw to kind of, like, hold and collect additional pieces of fruit.
Or even, like, if it's a multi-purpose thing, so it holds, but it also acts as, like a nutcracker.
You can like, dig with it a little bit to burrow into the mud.
I love that. I love that idea so much.
Yeah, what if instead of, like, persimmons, this is, like, we're kind of going all over the place geographically, but, like, what if this is, like, a coconut-eating frog?
I know, that's
like, it has to have, like, a sharpened, it has to have, like, a carapacean head so it can crack the fruits open.
I love that. I love that so much.
I think it should be shiny.
Shiny, yes. For sure. Yeah, like, iridescent frog, come on.
In terms of, by the way,
in terms of purpose, I think the immediate thing hard carapace on a frog goes to is something industrial. Like, yes, this has, like, an ecological purpose if it's pulling down fruit that needs to be, like, cracked open to eat. But I also think it becomes, like, this is protection that they engineered onto this thing. Like, it is doing something where this is the Chikurg version of putting a hard hat on, is putting a carapace on this frog.
And this is the kind of question I have. We won't get into, like, how vivid these are or anything like that, because that might intrude into other things. But what kind of color palette are you thinking of? Like, are we thinking browns? Are we thinking purples? Are we thinking blues? Just as, like, kind of like a... You said shiny iridescent, but I want to know, is it, like, a dark iridescent or is it a light iridescence to you? Are we thinking mother of pearl or are we thinking about, like, raven wings, you know?
Mm. I'm thinking kind of dragonfly wing.
Interesting.
I was thinking, like, kind of beetle shell blue, like that kind of darker. Like, I think especially if the idea is that
I like that.
This thing waits on the, like, it even if it, again, it's
stalking the coconuts.
Yeah, like, it does, it's not an ambush predator, it's not a snapping turtle, but still the idea that it doesn't stand out like a sore thumb if it was really bright iridescent is, like, it's always so weird to talk about Chikurga hosts in this way, because it really does become, like, a chicken or egg kind of thing.
But I think that's what's so inherently fascinating about the Chikurg, is this something that they've chosen to tame, or is this something that they've chosen to highlight based on their own personal preferences as a Chikurg themselves, you know?
Yeah, and the idea
it's a really fascinating thing you've come up with here. I really, really love the Chikurg.
The idea that, like, the features on these things are both designed so that they exist logically within an ecosystem, but also are, like, tailored to be realistic. Like, it's got a dark iridescence so it doesn't stand out in the mud for when there's not a Chikurg in it, but it's got iridescence because that's high-vis colors, baby. That's Chikurg OSHA.
It's fashion.
You can see it on the job site.
With that, however, I will invite you to pull another card, because I think having more specificity within the Chikurg makes them so fun. So feel free to pull another card and let's see what else it gives us. Uh-oh.
I'm gonna just draw again, so I pulled a Joker. All right.
Damn those things.
So this one is a six of diamonds, and that gives us more or fewer appendages.
Is this the rare tricycle frog?
I think we go even lower. I think this is a frog with two legs. It's just got the back legs.
What do you think, Wally?
I think it is still postured like a frog very much, but it does just have the back two legs, and they are so muscled because it is propelling itself on just those two legs.
But do you think maybe this is like, you know, when have you guys ever raised tadpoles yourself?
No.
Okay, this is something only I've done, apparently. But there's always that really weird, awkward phase where they are just two legs and tail, and you're sitting there and you're like, these are the most messed up legs I've ever seen in my life. And that's what that automatically makes me think mm-hmm. of. It's like mm-hmm. two powerful legs and maybe like a little bit of a tail that shouldn't be there anymore. And that's mm-hmm. like another one of those chicken and eggs. Like, did we stop this tadpole to frog thing because the tail made it easier to maneuver and push dirt and all that kind of stuff? I don't know. What do you think about something like that?
I am pulling up a tadpole stages picture, and I think it is a weird little fucked up guy with...
It's so funny because when you're a kid, okay, so this is maybe revealing like a little bit too much of how I grew up, but we had like a big pool, but one of our neighbors had like a tiny like splash pool and they weren't careful with it. And one day like a frog just spawned like hundreds of eggs. So every day we would go over and we would just like look at these frogs slowly develop. And I still think about them to this day. Fascinating creatures frogs are, but like really terrifying mm-hmm. to see it in motion.
mm-hmm. I think we should go with that, and you can still see like the arms that should develop tucked mm-hmm. into the body and head.
Oh, they just so messed up.
Are not, they just never are allowed to extend
to sprout themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, you can see them just kind of curled up in there, and maybe, like, every so often there's one of these host species that does get some legs sticking out up at the front, but...
Do you think that in Shakur terms, it's, like, the same idea of, like, cropping a dog's ears or tails? Like, oh my god, you let your thing, like, sprout its arms? That's so mm-hmm. weird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, one thing that, again, is true of Shakur, but we have chosen not to do on the main show for various reasons, is, like, it is absolutely common for a Shakur to, like, crawl out and do some modifications on their host, like, while it is alive. Ugh. And that's not necessarily painful, but it is very common to be like, I think I want this host to be red today. I'm going to, like, inject it with something that changes its DNA and gives it a prion disease that turns it red. So yes, I absolutely think, like, oh, you actually let it keep the arm stumps instead of, like, stopping it before there? Like, it's a little messy of you is absolutely, like, a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, everything so far, I am immediately like, this is a backhoe.
Right. This makes me think of, like, a bulldozer. This makes me think of, like, an earth mover.
Yeah, like, originally I was thinking, like, oh, maybe it's something with, like, using the tongue, because if it's getting fruit from the ground, that's going to be, like, a much longer tongue than a frog would usually have. But mm-hmm. but thinking about, like, the carapaced face and the really powerful back legs, I'm like, this is a shovel. This is moving things mm-hmm. from one place to another, whether that be other animals, whether that be, like, dirt, whether that be, like... whatever. Maybe there's also a little pelican in here where it's got like a big mouth where it can kind of store things.
Yes.
We're going to go into our last selection card before we move into Nature and Motion. This is Maiden's Term, and this is all about habits and personality. Quickly before we do that, I do want to kind of think about how we frame this. So either this will be the host without the Chukurg in it, or if you find that it fits better, we can even describe how it works in Chukurg society, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't want us to be stuck in the idea of we have to make this useful. This can be like a natural habit of the host itself as well, if you find that easier. So I invite you to draw another card. I keep saying invite you.
You're being very formal today.
I think it's because I'm leading. So like when I'm not leading, it's so much easier to be fun and free. But when I'm leading, I feel like I have to pick up like a standard of formality and professionalism. This might be why my boss likes me.
This is anyway fascinating.
Okay, tell us what you've got and what that tells us.
So for environmental behavior, we have Ace of Diamonds, which is invasive species and lives in very small groups.
Tell me where your mind goes first within that. Do you go for invasive species first or it's social order first?
I think social order makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am just imagining, like, yeah, it would live in very small groups because, like, you're not going to have more than a couple of these unless you're doing, like, a really, really huge government construction product. So I'm just imagining mm-hmm. the forklifts curling up at the end of the day in the warehouse, except the warehouse is also an animal.
You know that thing where it's like, and the buses go home to sleep at the bus station every night?
Exactly! That is literally what happens. The Chicago weird body horror, but they are also like, whatever this aesthetic is.
Thomas the Tank Engine. Fucking.
Yeah!
We're going back to our tunnels to sleep. I really like that. All right, and an invasive species, the two questions are, what allows it to thrive here and what does it threaten? What kind of, like, gets your imagination up a little bit about that?
I think what allows it to thrive here, because, yeah, we did talk about coconuts, and it's like, you don't get many coconuts or coconut-type fruit in wetlands or in mountains. That's very much like a tropical...
Mm-hmm. A coastal...
Coastal, tropical, low-lying areas close to the sea kind of thing. And I think that is the answer, is that, like, it's not native here because this is a host that was designed for a more coastal climate. But what allows it to thrive here is that, like...
Its specific use to the Chikurg itself?
I think it is that, and I think it is also just, like... I think down there it is a little more clumsy. When I imagine this thing, I kind of imagine it always, like, if it's walking around on the beach, it kind of is always, like, I just imagine it always kind of having its chin in the sand and kind of having to, like, shove itself along.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's up here, I imagine it much more as, like, it can kind of swim in the mud as that, like, mud skipper inspiration where it is, like, it is actually a little more at home in the mud and the water, and it is much more elegant in the mud in the water than it ever was on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very much like a happy accident where, like,
right,
does surprisingly well here. And yeah, fills a weird niche of, like, the mangrove trees that evolved here don't usually have to deal with, like, animals being able to climb up and get their fruit. Because, yeah, it is going to be a lot of salamanders and a lot of fish and a lot of, like, lower-lying things. Whereas this is very much, like, a large fruit-eating creature that also has incredible reach. And just, like, nothing here is designed, quote-unquote, to, like... None of these plants are used to having this thing, so it is just having wonderful snacks that it doesn't even need to crack open to eat. It is eating all of these persimmons, and it has no competition for persimmons.
It's eating the persimmons out of house and home.
I like that.
All right. I love it. I really do. This, I don't know, there's something about the way that this game plays that, like, did you guys also, when you were really, like, younger, think that you're going to be, like, a nature documentary cameraman? Is that just me?
This might once again be just you.
Oh my god,
this is
so embarrassing.
I think this is just you, but also when I was a kid, I was like, I'm going to be an inventor. And this is scratching the same itch in that I am inventing a guy.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Mm-hmm. No wonder. No wonder. Well, a lot of kids I grew up with also had the same thing of like, we're gonna film nature documentaries. And the reality of filming nature documentaries is that it sucks. Like filming all things.
I will say, Pax, from there, I don't want to call you out too hard, but I do think growing up in the suburbs of a North American town, not many people are like, damn, there's so much cool nature, I want to film it.
You know what? You say this, but you know, recently there's been all these pictures of fucking dussies in zoos in Japan and all those places. And I'm like, this is like if you put a raccoon in a cage for me to look at, you know?
Yeah, for everybody else, it's like, ooh, this is a cool new animal. And for you, it's like, oh yeah, I know him.
The thing I saw, I've talked about this so many times. It's the creature I saw eating KFC napkins and ignoring all the KFC.
What's wrong with him? Is he stupid?
Probably. From here, we've completed all our creature cards, which is very fun, very exciting. We move on to Nature in Motion, which is essentially the kind of painting a little scene with this creature we've made. As it's described in the book, after you've answered all the prompts associated with these three cards, you should have a pretty good sense of what this creature looks like and how it behaves. Now you'll play out a brief scene highlighting these features and traits more in detail. Establish the frame of the scene. We've talked about this. This is Pyrite or anybody else that you'd like to bring along in this adventure. It would most likely be a brother, but if Pyrite is not your jam, if you can't get into his voice, feel free to just decide that one of Pyrite is like the coolest uncle ever and taking a little brother out. Then take turns describing the creature using this frame. In a documentary themed game, one player might play one of these creatures describing its actions while another narrates for invisible audience and the others play the terrain or weather. How I think we're going to do this is that we kind of frame the action that the cards allow us to draw. And if you guys have any other prompts or ideas for this kind of framing, for this weather, for this kind of like environment, I think we should just jump in there. But I think this should be more of a solo adventure rather than a collaborative effort, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's probably easier to just have like, you describe what Pyrite is seeing instead of having, like, you describing Pyrite as the observer and one of us playing as this weird frog.
Right, right. So I'm going to pull out a card quickly, and then that will decide our little prompt. So I've got a three. A three is rest, leisure, or play. What I'm seeing in my mind's eye is I'm seeing Pyrite taking a break. I'd like to think that Pyrite vapes, but like he's vaping like fuel for himself. I don't know why. I think that's it really makes me laugh. This guy that's like, I'm hip and cool with the kids. I'm also doing stimulants like the younger brothers, and he's like centuries older than all of them. And I like to think that he's seeing a Chakurg do the equivalent in front of him. I'm imagining him seeing a Chakurg take a smoke break, like literally like the union has decided that it is the mandatory rest period. He sees a Chakurg hop out of the host into another one, and he gets to see this kind of frog creature also take a break with its host in a different body, and he gets to see how it kind of like, maybe it doesn't like awaken, maybe it's not like fully in control of itself, but it realizes that it has kind of like a sentience and a free will. And he sees how this thing that has been moving earth and moving very specific plots of land suddenly dig to its heart's content. Like before, it's like neat little rows, but then it kind of like bounds off, maybe a little clumsily, maybe a little silly, but it bounds off and it starts digging into like a specific spot. And as it digs up, it kind of digs up this perfectly round, bright colored parcel. And he realizes that it's a fruit, because in the next moment, this thing kind of like opens its big mouth and a tongue wraps out and wraps around it and crushes the fruit, which doesn't have a hard shell. It's quite a soft fruit. It's more like a persimmon or a strawberry or even a tomato. Maybe a tomato is like the best idea of it. And it's taking this root and it's kind of like eating along with it. And he watches as this thing goes from like a very clinical, very precise creature into this kind of like fun, bounding along, gluttonously devouring whatever it can in that little minute until another kind of like, maybe not a siren, but an alarm rings out and it's back into the thing. It gets called back over and this Jacquard goes from taking a break, maybe eating, maybe smoking, maybe doing whatever it wants to do. And it kind of goes back into this creature and what had become like a fun, silly, wriggling around little creature in the next 10 minutes just becomes, again, something practical and built, and it creates nice little lines and plots in the field, in this like wet marsh field. And I think that's kind of like how I want this first kind of like glimpse into the Jacquard and its way of life to be for Pyrite. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yay. Approval from you. The only That's thing I great. Care for. From there, I do want the viewers to know that there is another section that goes into natural selection, which is arranging a new order from the card to come up with another creature. We will be skipping that due to the nature of the Jacquard and also how we want to play for today, but it is like another really fun component of the game. We highly recommend you do it yourself. It's really fun. But from there, we will be doing a bit of a round robin and starting again from the top to create a new creature. And from there, I think it's actually Maiden who will start us off with the first one. Am I right?
Yes, we are going to...
Or is it Molly?
We are going to rotate one to the right, so it will be me doing the intro, then you get to do the specifics, then Molly will do our finisher, and I will come back for okay. our scene for the second one.
Awesome. Perfect.
Perfect.
So this time, our first card is an Eight of Clubs. So this is another reptile or amphibian.
Interesting.
But it's an eight,
ooh,
meaning it's
this
a
one's
flyer
interesting.
Or glider.
Ooh.
This one's fun. Where does your mind immediately go to for that kind of stuff?
With this one, my mind immediately goes to glider over flyer. Just because I feel like,
right.
again, it's kind of like it would have been really easy to do, like, a Brachiosaurus or something from the last one. And I think it's really easy
mm-hmm.
to see reptile and see, flyer and be like, boom, we have a pterosaur. Like, easy.
Right.
My immediate thought goes to another kind of amphibian. My
mm-hmm.
brain immediately goes to, you know, like those like sure gliders and flying squirrels where they have like the flaps
yes.
of skin.
Uh-huh.
What if that, but it's like a salamander?
I love that.
Yes.
Just this wet little pancake gliding on flaps of skin.
I really love that. The first thing I thought of are those lizards that run on the water with the frilled heads.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I love...
Those are so cute.
I love... they're so cute. I love this idea of a sugar glider or salamander. It immediately sparks so much in my mind. I really love that. Is there anything else you want to add to this kind of thing before we go into the more distinctive features?
I think I will also specify, I do think I want the general size to be smaller. Like, I think the backhoe frog
mm-hmm.
was very much like, that's a big animal.
A larger
you know?
Creature.
Like, it's not enormous if it's eating coconuts because, like, how mass would work. But it's still, like, definitely, like, large dog-sized at a minimum, if not probably larger. Whereas this one probably is, like...
Lizard.
Yeah, like, has to be a little bigger than usual, because the general scale I have for Chakurg is, like, young Chakurg are, like, small hamster, and, like, really old Chakurg are, like, small guinea pig. But I still think this is definitely
maybe, like,
a smaller animal.
So maybe, like, more monitor lizard than anything else.
Yeah, monitor lizard, like... trying to think of, like, a really good reference animal that isn't, like, weirdly obscure.
You can go for weirdly obscure, and I could look it up.
Yeah, we have Google.
Can you believe it? Science is incredible.
I think, like, skunk-sized, which is definitely, like, bigger than a squirrel, bigger than your average sugar glider, but is still, like, reasonably small.
Skunk is a good one. It is really funny that you keep pulling up animals I have never seen in my real life.
Again, the difference between animals I've seen and animals you've seen.
I know. But that's what kind of, like, makes these, like, speculative biology games so fun as well. Mm-hmm. My reference is completely different to your guys. With that, we have a skunk-sized sugar glider lizard, which I'm already excited about. I love that. I'm going to be pulling our next card, which this time is, a Jack of Spades.
Ooh.
So let's see what that is. It's a black suit, and a Jack is iconic ears.
Amphibians are well known for their ears.
Well, this one is. Apparently.
So the questions that it asks is, what shape and what purpose? And I like the idea of kind of like ginkgo leaf shaped ears, and more having them act as kind of like rudders. So instead of gliding through water, these kind of ears twist and move into the air. There's like a better term for it. It's like airplane wings. I'm trying to think of what those are also called.
Oh, God, it's like on the tip of my tongue.
I know. I'm trying to think of what they're called. Vertical stabilized, that's not it.
The flaps?
I was going to say, I think they're just called flaps.
Which is so funny. We're looking for, like, proper terms, and they're like, yeah, the flaps.
Yeah, my brain immediately goes to, like, Air-Leon, and it's like, no, it's just called the flap.
The phalanges, or whatever.
Wikipedia has it as flap, parentheses, aeronautics.
Awesome. It's an aeronautic flap, essentially. So it acts like a rudder. It acts like a brake. That's the kind of, like, immediate idea I go for. And I automatically think, like, these should be colored. You know, they should be, like, red or orange or something like that. So maybe they act as, like, a dual purpose one. But we'll see how that goes. But that's, like, my immediate thought. I think about, like, little ears. You know what, actually, what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking about fucking Dumbo.
I mean, yeah. Maybe it has, like, that's more surface area, and it's more control, because you can have tendons and ligaments in ears that you really can't if it's just skin stretched between two, like, limbs. It is a little more difficult to control.
Right, so I'm going for ear rudders in the shape of ginkgo leaves.
Yes.
I don't know immediately why I thought of ginkgo leaves, but you know what?
They're,
we shouldn't question
shape.
Inspiration. They are a fun shape, and I think this kind of, like, symbolism of, like, eternality and that kind of stuff, it feels so deliberate for the Chakurg. Sorry to wax poetic about your own people. Maiden.
I mean, the whole reason I invited people to play this game is because, like, I am not going to have an iron hand on the Chakurg. You are more than welcome to play in this space with me. And the things you say are just as canon as the things I say.
So we have something really funny that just happened. I have pulled a four of clubs, which, if keen-eyed and keenly aware viewers will understand, means that this one also has a hard carapace.
Oh my god.
This dry, cold wetland is just like an intensely industrialized zone now.
It's also just like, it says, like, oh, some of your cards might might, like, contradict each other, and literally every card we've gotten, except for, like 3 out of the 4 cards we've gotten, have been like, well, that's not. Like, we've gotten 2 amphibians with hard carapaces, and also big ol' amphibian ears, and the dry wetland.
Big ol'. But that's great. That's great. And you know what? For this, I'm going, like, pure ornamental carapace. I think this is, like, old fancy kind of filigree and weird shapes and things that, like, probably don't even help with aerodynamics. I think originally the idea of these carapaces was maybe to fend off a natural predator, maybe something. I've changed my mind in the middle of this. I think the carapace is only on the belly. I think if this is a glider, I think it's most likely prone to attacks from the bottom. I think the carapace acts both as, like, when you study sharks, sharks are blue at the top and they're white at the bottom, because when you want to look at the top, they match the surroundings no matter what, right? Whether you look at them up and down. And I think it's both that idea where they match their surroundings. And I think it's also, they are most likely to be, like, either shot down or grabbed from the bottom rather than the top. And I think this carapace first showed up as that. It's like a reverse armadillo in my mind.
Oh my.
That's my idea for this.
This is fascinating.
Does it curl up like an armadillo?
Do you mean, does it curl up so its spine breaks?
Wait, no. I have a really funny idea that I'm going to pitch with you.
Okay, please tell me.
What if it's...
I'm here for it.
What if it's just the stomach that has a carapace, and it's just one plate, and this thing throws itself from trees and skips itself across the water like a stone?
100%.
Going back to your, like, lizard that runs on the water, what if the reason this thing has a hard carapace is because it is literally, like, dropping itself out
skipping
of a tree
itself.
And skipping itself over water like a stone?
100%. 100%. 100%. It's our stone-skipping lizard. I love this.
The stone-skipping salamander.
Oh my god. Oh my god, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with him. Guys, everyone should play this game.
This game is so good.
See what fucked up things you guys can make. And I'm pointing directly at the camera, but you can't see because this is an audio-only medium. With that, I'm happy with our stone-skipping salamander with ears that change its direction. It's a Beyblade!
Yeah, it needs the ears to stabilize if it starts spinning.
Oh my god, I'm gonna cry. It's a Beyblade. Oh my god, it's a Beyblade. Our Beyblade salamander. I'm so happy to move on to its habits and personality, which means, Molly, it's your turn for a card.
All right.
What did you get?
I have great news about...
Okay.
So I drew for our stone-skipping salamander the king of spades. which means that this lizard that throws itself out of a tree to skip across lakes leads a sedentary lifestyle. This creature does not move often. What is enough to stir its attention?
Oh my god.
And then the spades are dozens, hundreds, or thousands of this species live together. What is the collective noun for these creatures?
Oh my god. This is amazing.
Is skippers too obvious of a collective noun?
Skippers is amazingly. Mm-hmm. I love skippers. Mm-hmm.
I think a skippers of salamanders is, like, incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to pitch this.
Mm-hmm.
They move seasonally. So right for
Oh, it's skipper season. Every winter, thousands of skippers.
they all just kind of drop from the trees to like skip to another region that is like has a little bit more water, and then they stay there, and then they skip back up here in the spring.
I'm gonna cry.
Imagine what the sound of that must be like.
Oh,
big slappy.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, so they this might be like a tourist event where it's like, oh, you know, like similar to like cherry blossom season, people come and visit for skipper season.
Oh my god, it's the great migration of the Salamgeti.
Okay, but I do have to bring us back to the ground and say, what is this for?
Who cares?
This. Oh my god, I just had the dumbest idea.
What? Please tell us immediately.
You know what this is?
What is this?
This is the Jakurg's idea of what a roller coaster is.
Oh my god.
Get in this thing and hurl yourself across the lake.
It's the Jurassic World spheres.
Yeah.
Yes.
An animal. Oh my god, I'm gonna cry.
And I wanna say that like there's
the bumper salamanders.
Yes. Yes. I think there is at this point some like maybe some regulation on how frequently you can ride a skipper salamander, because I can imagine some young Jakurg being like just going way out of season and riding them and like really messing up their migratory patterns.
Oh my god. Oh my god. The endangered creatures.
The concept of like, oh, being like, oh, those teens keep riding their skateboard, except it's, oh, those teenage isopods keep disrupting migratory patterns by skidding these things around town. Doing tricks in them.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm so obsessed with this. Why don't we actually play on Alza the entire time?
Everyone else was like, no, we don't want to make weird aliens. We want to make Star Trek people who are just blue and have extra eyes.
I fear we may have to do a second episode of this.
This rules.
I fear we may have to do several episodes of this.
This is just going to be the entire podcast now.
Nature in motion.
Nature.
I have never been more excited for a card in my life.
You could either do a card, or if you have an idea, you're more than free to go for
it. I want a card, because I want to know.
Okay.
Oh my god.
Oh, what did you get? Oh my god.
So I got a 10, which is a tough life lesson.
So, is this a tough life lesson for the salamander or for the Jakurg riding
it? This is a tough life lesson for the Jakurg riding it. And, you know...
Tell us immediately.
We were just talking about, like, this as being, like, a thrill ride thing for teenage parasites and Jakurg. And I just immediately go to, like... Pyrite is, like, watching this construction site... And, like, there's one area of... Because, like, this not necessarily construction site, but, like, we have, like, a backhoe here that is doing earth moving. So they are probably doing some sort of, like, industrial project here. And I love just imagining...
This is just, like, Treasure Planet.
Yes, actually. Literally what like I'm Treasure going Planet? For is, like, Pyrite going over to an area of this work site... That doesn't have any active construction going on, and seeing like some juvenile Jakurg has brought their slider salamander over here and is trying to like do tricks on it and, like, bounce it around the mud.
Oh my god.
And the tough life lesson is very much like...
The Chikurin cops come to pick him up?
Yeah, like, very much like... He's doing tricks and then, like, loses control and takes a bad bounce off the mud because you can't count on mud being, like, smooth and easy like water. And he takes a bad bounce off the mud and crashes into a frog.
Oh my god. Frog violence.
And, like, it is like a miniature traffic accident where they both climb out of the hosts to, like, chitter at each other and wave their antenna at each other.
Oh my god.
And the one that was in the one that was in the salamander, like, very sadly walks away, and, like, Pyrite doesn't speak their language. He can't understand the chittering, but he knows that tiny, tiny Chikurin just got yelled at so bad for riding his skateboard at a construction site.
I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna cry. I love this so much. Pirate is getting the full Chikurin experience in this one day. With that, however, we are moving on to our final creature. This time, Molly will be choosing our taxonomy for us. What kind of creature this is. Molly, I invite you to draw the first card.
All right.
We're
drawing so many black cards today.
It's fine. We'll be. Oh my god! Did we draw a club on every single first card?
Every single first card. Three reptile or amphibian.
So I just drew the Ace of Clubs. So once again, it's a reptile or amphibian, and this one is a pollinator or plant spreader.
This one's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This one's fun. There's not a lot of, like, sort of. Reptile, cold-blooded, I don't think cold-blooded is, like, an appropriate term anymore, right? I think they've retired that. But it still fits,
mm-hmm.
I think. Mm-hmm. This might be revealing my age a little bit. There's not, like, this, like, perception of pollinators or things that drop off, like, useful seeds or anything like that. So where does your mind mm-hmm. immediately go to for that?
For reference for PAX, the actual term they use is dependent on the specific type of animal,
mm-hmm.
but the one that everyone thinks about with cold-blooded is ectothermy, which is controlling body temperature through external processes, such as by basking in the sun.
Right, right. Or it's like sharks who need to maintain their temperature through water regulation and that kind of stuff. Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Where does your mind go to?
My mind immediately goes to... And this is kind of less purely from the prompt and more just kind of like, well, we've got these other types of reptiles / amphibian. I'm thinking of, like, a snake or an eel.
I love that.
Yeah. And because...
Noodle arms.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of noodling around, happy to be in the water, happy to be in the mud. And just kind of darting all around this area.
Is there, like, a specific way you think it either pollinates or deposits plants in any way? Or do you think it just, like, kind of sticks to the body and as it, like, maneuvers around, it kind of deposits seeds as it goes?
Yeah, I am kind of thinking of it, like, swimming through pools of algae and just, like, bringing it along with it.
I like that. I like that idea.
Yeah.
I love that. Like a moss spreader.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's kind of also a partial element of sometimes it will eat a thing and that thing has eaten some seeds. And mm-hmm. so, like, it spreads that way. But I think primarily it's just kind of got enough texture to its body that it picks up, like, debris in the mud and brings it around to its next location.
I love this. This is immediately so compelling. I love it.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like, I love the idea of, like, sea snake who does pollination by just, like, physically getting, like, duckweed and algae caught in its scales and just moving it to different parts of the marsh.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a, like, a fun thing. It leads to, like, this idea of, like, mythology and that kind of stuff. It's really amazing. I say that with every prompt, but that's because every prompt has felt amazing. So I don't even feel bad about saying it. If there's nothing else you'd like to add, we are free to move on to our second creature cards, which are our distinctive features, which Maiden will be doing. I'm excited for this one.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Ace of Hearts.
So this is the very ace creature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one's pretty easy, but also very fun. Because okay. a red ace is long tail. And this is where I get to go on a little biology rant and say, actually, snakes tend to have very short tails. If you actually go into, like, the body plan breakdown of a snake, they have very long torsos and, like, surprisingly short tails, comparatively.
So is this your kind of retribution of it actually has a short torso and this time the tail is actually long? Or is this, it's a long torso or the tail is still, and the tail is still long? What's your kind of, like, thought on that?
I think this is the longest snake in the world.
Yes!
This snake can circle our Earth several times over.
But also, I'm imagining it, like, specifically being one of those snakes that still has, like... Because I feel like the only way that this becomes really obvious is if you have, like, a reference point. So I'm thinking about those mm-hmm. like, legged snakes, where they have the extremely
right.
tiny, almost vestigial arms... And this thing literally mm-hmm. being, like, it has a pair of vestigial arms, like, right behind the head. And then you go 20 feet down the body, and there's the vestigial legs. And then there's still, like, 30 feet of tail past that. Like, this is a snake that is built like a Chinese dragon.
I love that. I really do love that. And, like, with any features of the tail, do you think it's just, like, more body? Or do you think that the tail is kind of more distinct?
Yeah, because the prompt for this one that goes is stiff, flexible, prehensile.
It's funny because prehensile and flexible are very related in my mind. So do you think this thing can manipulate its tail, or do you think it moves with the motion of...
I think it moves...
Straight up, I nearly said the motion of the ocean.
Oh my god. I think it is very...
I sound like an old man.
I think it is very much like a normal snake. It follows the same motion. Like, it is flexible, but not prehensile.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think it is very
yeah,
much
I
like yeah, this is just a very long animal that kind of, like, if you've ever seen how some sea snakes move and how some, like, snakes move in sand, where they just kind of, like, make an S and it, the way they move their body makes it look like they're not moving at all, almost. And I think that's how this thing moves through water.
Have you guys ever seen those snake owners that, like smooth down a blanket perfectly so their snake can't get a grip on it? And it just, like, completely
yes.
moves around
it's
in one
so
spot.
Funny. This snake is in hell, but, like, it's kind of funny.
The snake has no idea why the hell this is happening to it. No, I definitely like that. I like that a lot. I like this idea that it's just this constant moving force within its environment.
And for our second distinctive feature, we have a red king, which is camouflage or mimicry.
That's fun. There's a lot of ways you could go about that one. So I guess my main thing is, are you thinking about mimicking its environment, or do you think it's mimicking another thing? Is it mimicking a wave? Is it mimicking a predator? Is it mimicking prey? Is it mimicking foliage?
My immediate thought is here, and this is a little goofy, so feel free to shoot me down.
I don't think I will.
I think this is mimicking multiple animals.
Okay.
I think this is
so
long so
like a
that
mimic
like,
octopus.
It's shaped to mimic, like, instead of, you look at this thing and the way it's colored and the way its body is shaped and the way the light shines off of it, it looks like five or six fish swimming in a row and not one long animal.
Can I suggest kind of like a way it's referred to as?
Mm-hmm.
What if this is a living mural? What if this is an ad board for the Tekkurg.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
The guy in this is the equivalent of the guy they have, like, doing sign spinning. Or, like, in the mascot suit.
Right. But also, like, in another way, like, Tekkurg Banksy is in one of these things.
Oh, my God. Zik would get along with Tekkurg Banksy. Don't let me think about that.
Oh, no.
God, I love that, though.
I really like that. I really like that. Sorry to toot my own horn.
No,
but
I really like
fun.
That, too. Like, the idea that it's mimicking, like, a school of fish, and they've turned it into, like, the school of fish had, like, patterns on them that suggest, like...
Maybe they saw this, and it became, like, I thought about Apes Together Strong when I was thinking about the school of fish analogy, like, instead of, like, a school of fish or a large group or, like, even a big predator, like, I like this idea of them seeing that and seeing this capability of, like, this intense patterning and immediate, like, thought recognition and then immediately deciding to turn it for profit. It's just so fun. So human of the Tekkurg to do that. Is there anything else you'd like to add to the mimicry aspect of it?
No, I think that covers it really well.
Okay, perfect. So it's my turn again. If you're not tired of hearing my voice, we'll be talking about its habits and personality. And what I've pulled is... Guys, if we were playing poker, we would be like... fucking amazing right now, because we have gotten nothing but high cards the entire time. I've pulled out a Queen of Spades. So dozens, hundreds, or thousands of these species live together. Oh man, what is the collective noun for these creatures? A Pictionary.
A multitude, maybe?
A multitude is nice. There's something that I'm thinking about, but I can't. We could even call it a gallery.
Oh, I love Ooh. That with the living mural thing.
Yeah,
like a gallery.
Yeah,
that's nice.
A gallery of eels. But these are also hibernating creatures. This creature is dormant during certain times of the year. How soon before it retires again? And I've been thinking about this one because that's quite like an interesting prospect. I'm wondering if they have like a nesting period where they become like a static image.
Ooh.
So right now it's wet and cool, right? But there should be like proper warm, dry period. And I wonder if it's the same as like kind of like a stick insect or a leaf insect or something like that, where it mimics the kind of like crackled ground and it becomes like this perfect nursery around its offspring, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that idea as, like, a natural thing. It did. Maybe it doesn't do that now because there's no need to have hundreds or thousands of them. The Tekkurg are overrun by ads. Tekkurg Times Square is a nightmare hell zone.
I also love the addition here of, like, because when I was thinking mimicry, I was thinking, like, a static pattern. But I love the idea that the Tekkurg have taken this to an extreme and this is closer to, like, a cuttlefish. Where it can, like, actually
right.
make moving patterns. And, like, just imagining, mm-hmm. like, a gallery of these swimming along and, like, this weird thing where all of them are twisting their bodies and moving these patterns. It's, like, a dozen snakes, but it looks like hundreds of fish swimming down this canal. And the Tekkurg
right.
have redesigned mm-hmm. this to be an ad for, like... Remember to report any unauthorized hosts to your local government office. Fucking...
God, that's so funny.
Visht Kitter is watching you.
Oh my God. Big Brother adds this wonderful natural thing that they've completely twisted into their own needs. Which, I'm making the Tekkurg maybe sound a little bit more evil than they are. I mean, it's a different culture. It's an alien experience.
I mean, yes, but also they are explicitly trying to kill all of the other cultures. And the only reason they can't is because they don't know how to do faster than light travel and they're really bad at spaceflight.
So, you know, maybe I can be a little bit mean to the bugs. I can be a little bit Starship Troopers to them.
Yeah.
But I'm happy for that. I'm happy for these dozens of of moving galleries that hibernate to protect their young during the dry seasons. I think specifically it's also warmer weather that activates this kind of like need for them rather than the cool weather that we're experiencing now. Anyways, that is my little section. So we're moving back. I think this is Molly again to framing this kind of scene as what Pyrite is seeing. And you're free to come up with your own idea of what you're seeing, but you're also welcome to pull a card if that is what you prefer.
I think that's what I prefer. Yeah, I'm going to pull a card and see what to do for this one. Man, this is quite the poker hand again.
Oh my God. Guys, we've literally got three of a kind right now.
Three of a kind aces and king queen. Like,
guys, why don't we just go to Vegas instead of doing like a podcast live show? Can you guys just take me to Vegas? Because our luck is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Raising money on Patreon to go play elaborate slot machines in Vegas, betting it all on the Lord of the Rings slot machine that's like 30 feet tall.
Oh my God. Anyway.
So I drew an ace, and for this one, it doesn't matter what suit or color. It's just about the number, and ace means daily routines. So, as Pyrite is kind of finishing up his rocket fuel smoke break, he starts wandering back to the conference room and is suddenly just kind of blinded by this massive snake creature winding its way around the construction site. And
oh my God.
It's a good like 1.5 of him stacked on top with the level of the mud right now. It's like if this was the wet season, it would be fully swimming, but as it is, it's just kind of weaving its way around through the mud. And he can see some of the frogs like left over like some of the fruit skins or some like seeds and stuff, and also a stray tool or two actually gets caught up in the massive scales. But as it winds its way past Pyrite, it starts flashing just kind of generic advertisements about like construction site safety and making sure to lock up. And then right in front of Pyrite flashes, "Will all diplomats please return to the conference room? We are beginning our next session."
I love that.
That's so good.
And he just says, "You got it, Vishy." And
oh my God.
the snake just starts blaring like a red, just like get back to
unauthorized.
The conference room.
unauthorized use of a nickname.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so oh Pyrite walks back over to the conference room and sees the snake kind of circling around some of the frog backhoes to like
oh my God
text advertise at them of like, "Hey, speed up the pace."
I keep imagining this thing being like, "Have you or a loved one been injured in on a workplace site?" Mm-hmm. Suck it up. Mm-hmm. Molly, I could kiss you on the mouth for that one.
God.
It's just got the number Vishy. Of
oh, chef's kiss.
Vishy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the daily routine of this creature now. If we were back when it originated, the daily routine would be much more like flowing through nature and reflecting back the surroundings in 1,000 prisms. But, you know, it's a billboard now.
Who cares about that? When we could use it for Yowie.
But yeah, that's my turn.
I'm going to cry. I really love that one.
I just want to add one thing that makes this so much more incredible.
Yes.
I will remind you that Auzum and Chakurg culture is a Flintstones world. So all of the tools this thing was like pulling with it were also like shrimps and small animals.
Yeah, you see, that was its natural, that was its natural, like, food gathering before, and before it got turned into a billboard. Guys, this game is really good. This game is great.
There's supposed to be a last part of this where we describe all of the creatures coexisting alongside each other, but I think we kind of already did that.
Yeah, I don't think we need the creature comfort.
My suggestion is instead of doing creature comforts, I would love to give the floor back to you, Pax, and give you one last scene that is Pyrite reflecting on his stay here. What does he think about Ausm? How did he enjoy his trip? Like, what's Pyrite thinking as he walks back to that conference center? Is how I would love to end this.
As you know, listeners, there is a part to this game that's all about how these creatures interact with their natural world. Jakur culture and Ausm at this point is not a natural world anymore. I mean, it is, but you know, it's bioengineered. So we're going to go with Maiden's suggestion, and we're going to kind of like think about Pyrite's business slash tourist trip. Pyrite really is doing the Africa business trip where you spend 3 days in a boring conference, and then the person that's taking you to the conference is like, we're gonna go on a safari, and then you fuck around for 3 days. Again, this is only something that I've experienced and not you guys have. I feel like I'm constantly saying that in this one. And I think what kind of Pyrite takes away from this entire thing is how vastly uncomfortable he is with the Chakurgs' every handle on public life. We're not going to get into how Pyrite's leadership works. It's not that game. But on the Splinter Solee, there are no advertisements. There are no walking billboards. There are no alarms. There is nothing that shows the Triarchy is looking at you and watching your every move. Whether they are or aren't, that's really none of your business. But the signaling, the knowledge that someone is looking at you, that's vastly different. Not only is it plain use of power and aggression, but it's a sign of weakness too. Do the Chakurg really have a handle on every single aspect of their society? Do the Chakurg really know every little bit that's going on? Pyrite thinks a little bit in the back of his mind, there may be some people who are not happy about the current status quo. Maybe someone doesn't want to drive a backhoe for the rest of their lives. Maybe someone's entire identity doesn't want to be tied onto a frog or an eel or a lizard that skips around. Maybe some people are more receptive to suggestion. Maybe some people are more willing to learn about a new world. So what Pyrite leaves this entire situation with is a knowledge that Vishkidder is showing a little bit more weakness than maybe he thinks about. And maybe there's a new way to go forward. And also, maybe holidays really kick ass and he should do a little bit more of them. I mean, if the Chakurg teens are skipping around on lakes in little salamanders, maybe there's a little bit more fun out there in the universe to discover. But that's for another day. Did you know that rocket fuel cannot melt steel lungs?
It's actually...
Bird, cut that out.
Bird, leave that in. If you left mine on lemon joking, you have to leave that one in.